Hi everyone. First off, I want to thank you all for taking time out of, I'm sure, your incredibly busy schedule to tune in to this webinar series. This webinar series was developed in order to offer an online version of the 2019 Spring Field Day program that we conducted in June. My name is Savannah Katulski and I am a Livestock Extension Agent for the University of Hawaii CTAR, and I am based on the island of Kauai. I am a bit of a mineral nerd and spent most, if not all, of my time researching minerals, and specifically copper, in my graduate program. So you could say I'm pretty excited to be able to take some time to share some of my knowledge on minerals with you. This aspect of the webinar will dive deeper into the role of copper in cattle diets, as well as discuss some of the nutritional interactions that are important in understanding copper nutrition for cattle in the state of Hawaii. When we discuss mineral nutrition of livestock, we typically divide minerals into two classifications, macro and micro minerals. Macro minerals are minerals that are needed in higher quantities in the diet, and they're often reported as a percentage of the diet. Examples of macro minerals consist of calcium, phosphorus, magnesium, sulfur, and sodium chloride or salt. Microminerals, on the other hand, are needed in smaller or trace quantities of the diet, which is why they are commonly referred to as trace minerals. These are often reported as ppm or parts per million whenever you have forage analyses on your feed tags or on your mineral bags or tubs. Minerals in this classification include chromium, cobalt, copper, iodine, manganese, molybdenum, selenium, and zinc. Now, we could take years to discuss all of the nutritional interactions and aspects of each of these minerals, but for today, we're just going to focus on copper specifically. Now, don't let their names fool you. Just like protein and energy, minerals, no matter if they're considered a macro or micro mineral, must be balanced in a diet. A shortage of any of these minerals can limit animal productivity and result in an inefficient cow herd. Just like you would make sure there's enough protein or energy in your forages, you must make sure your cattle are consuming sufficient amount of minerals in order to capitalize on their productivity potential. Minerals are provided to cattle in a variety of methods. Typically, the feed or forage, in the case of most cattle producers in Hawaii, is the first source of mineral for cattle. The grasses or legumes in your pastures are the first thing a producer should look at when determining mineral levels in your cow's diet. Now, in terms of mineral supplements, there are many products available. The most common method or delivery method is loose or bagged minerals, such as the Purina bag pictured here. The Hawaii Mineral Mix is the most common loose mineral that I have observed being used on many operations in the state, although you can work with companies in order to develop a custom blend for your operation. Other delivery methods include trace mineral blocks, like the red American Stockman block you can see here, which contain no macro minerals, they only contain trace minerals. Or there's molasses-based blocks, which are growing in popularity across the country. These products are easier to use. However, I would comment that when it comes to molasses blocks, they are commonly being used as a protein block, which is the most expensive form of protein you can provide to your herd. Be sure to pencil it out and make sure that these products will work for your operation from a financial standpoint. There are many companies which manufacture molasses-based blocks that are strictly mineral supplements without the added protein, so those might be something that might work better for your operation. As mentioned throughout this Field Day webinar series, copper deficiency is quite common, and I suspect that it is likely the largest mineral deficiency we see on ranches in Hawaii. There are others that are observed, and those will be discussed further in Dr. O'Donnell's talk. These two photos here are classic examples of copper deficiency. These two photos represent the same animal. However, the one on the left has discolored, missing, patchy, and rough hair, and she's copper deficient at this point. The photo on the right, however, is the same animal after copper treatment, and as you can see, the hair is shinier, it's grown back, and overall the cow looks healthier. Now, don't judge her based on her frame. This is clearly an example of an older styled cow. Dr. Odani will go into more detail on the clinical signs of copper deficiency as well as multiple other mineral deficiencies. But I do want to point out that oftentimes the first sign of copper deficiency that you'll see in your cattle is a discoloration of the coat. It often kind of looks like sun bleaching, but most times this is due to a deficiency of copper. The role of copper in basic body function in cattle is extensive, and we won't get into everything in this webinar because I'm sure it will bore you all, but there are a few things that are important to note. There are many copper-containing and copper-dependent enzymes, and the functions of these enzymes include cellular function, neural transmitting, and antioxidation. There are many other enzymes that either contain copper or require copper in order to facilitate their function. Copper is also important in cardiovascular function due to its role in connective tissue metabolism, and cardiac failure has been reported to be caused from extreme copper deficiency. This was historically referred to as falling disease, where cattle in New Zealand were dropping dead in the pasture out of nowhere due to ruptures in their aortas. Further inspection indicated that these cows were in fact extremely copper deficient and therefore unable to maintain the integrity of the blood vessels and heart tissue. Similarly, bone formation requires adequate copper level due to the role that it has in all of these connective tissue metabolisms. And Dr. Odani will discuss some of these clinical signs in further detail in her talk. Now, copper and iron, they have a love-hate relationship. Copper is necessary for iron absorption, and animals that are deficient in copper will eventually become anemic as well. However, high levels of iron in the diet can inhibit copper from being properly absorbed by the animal, and therefore these two minerals must maintain a delicate balance. Can you see yet why I love talking about minerals? Their roles in the body are so intricate and intense. Now, all of this is all well and good, but let's be honest here. If you're in the cow-calf business, reproduction and immunity are likely big priorities for you, and maintaining cows with reproductive success in calves with sufficient immune systems is imperative. We're going to discuss these a little bit further in the following slides using some studies as examples to show copper, the relationship between copper and these two functions. This slide summarizes a survey study where blood samples were taken from 318 cows. It was noted which cows aborted their calves and which had a calf on the ground and compared this to their copper status. After the cows had calved and or aborted their calves, blood and liver samples were collected from these cows in order to evaluate copper status. Of the cows which aborted calves, just over 87% of them were copper deficient, whereas just under 12% of the cows which carried calves to term were copper deficient. These results indicate a relationship between copper deficiency and the ability of a cow to put a calf on the ground, which is likely one of the top priorities of your ranch. The next two slides I'm going to talk about are summarized from the same study where they used 120 cows to study the impact of copper deficiency on multiple aspects of reproduction. The authors of this study designed it so all of the cows on trial were on a copper deficient diet. However, half of the animals received an injection of copper sulfate in order to maintain sufficient copper status, whereas the control group was copper deficient due to the diet that they were consuming and a lack of the copper injection. These animals were then placed in a reproductive focus study. The results indicated that animals which were treated with an injection of copper sulfate, or the copper sufficient group, had an 85% conception rate, whereas the cows in the control or copper deficient group had a 36% conception rate. Now, I'm guessing when you heard me say a 36% conception rate, you got a little concerned, or maybe your eyes bulged in your head a little bit. Frankly, it is unacceptable and not profitable to have conception rates that low for a primarily cow-calf operation. The goal would be to have an 100% conception rate in your cow herd, because we all know an open cow is a cow that isn't earning her place in the herd and is simply just an expense to your operation. The same study I just discussed also observed the impact of copper deficiency on a cow's ability to display estrus. In this study, Only 60% of the copper deficient cows presented estrus, while 83% of the copper injected or copper sufficient cows expressed estrus. So not only did the group forced into copper deficiency have more open cows, but they weren't even successful at presenting estrus compared to their copper sufficient groups. This function is another often overlooked but yet still very vital aspect of a successful and productive cow herd. In summary, copper is linked to the cow's ability to express estrus and therefore gain the interest of the bull. It's important in conception rates, as well as calving rates and the ability of a cow to carry the calf to term. If you are running a cow-calf operation, these three aspects of reproduction are the drivers of your operation and dictate your ability to make a profit off of your herd. Switching gears a little bit, we're going to now discuss the relationship between copper and immunity. This is one that has been established for decades with research that's been conducted on mice, rats, pigs, and cattle. For a rancher, once that calf is on the ground, the next goal is to ultimately get the calf shipped off or placed into a grass finishing program or sold through some other avenue. The goal is to do this with the least amount of inputs possible in order to have a greater net profit off of each calf. Proper immune function can significantly affect this. In this study, there were two groups of calves, a copper sufficient group and a copper deficient group. Both groups were exposed to infectious bovine rhinotracheitis virus, or IBRV, which is one of the viral components of the bovine respiratory disease complex. The calves that were copper sufficient had greater serum titers. For those of you who don't know, titers are the goal of a vaccine. When we expose an animal to a pathogen via a vaccine, we want as many titers present in the blood after this exposure so that when exposed to the pathogen again in the future, an IBRV will always be one that calves are exposed to, they'll be better equipped to fight off the disease. These results of this study indicate that copper-sufficient calves will be less likely to be impacted by an IBRV immune challenge in the future compared to their copper-deficient counterpart calves. In the same paper, researchers again had a group of copper-sufficient and copper-deficient calves. However, instead of IBRV, these calves were exposed to Mannheimia hemolytica, which is a big player in the BRD complex and is the major bacterial pathogen which causes most of the symptoms of bovine respiratory disease. Again, calves which were copper-sufficient had greater serum titers after this challenge, indicating a greater ability to handle any future Mannheimia hemolytica challenges in the future. Now, I put this infographic in the top right of this slide to kind of further demonstrate the impact that immunity can have on an operation. This data is summarized from USDA APHIS data, which indicates the greatest treatment cost for a feedlot is BRD at $23.60 an animal. A survey of ranchers last year indicated on average $26 was spent per calf treating BRD. I can imagine with the increased cost of labor and medication that this number is much higher for Hawaii. Now, if we can decrease the need to round up and treat calves for things such as BRD by simply having adequate mineral nutrition, that would mean more money in your pockets at the end of the day on a per calf basis. In summary, copper deficiency can impact vaccine efficacy, as we've seen in the studies I presented. It can impact initial immune response, future immune responses based on the titer values that we discussed. And I didn't touch on this, but it has long been linked to immune cell regulation and function as well as the efficacy of an inflammatory response. So now that I've given you the reason why copper is important, let's transition into some of the nutritional aspects of copper nutrition in the beef cow. When we discuss copper deficiency, there are two types: a primary copper deficiency, which is caused from insufficient copper in the diet, which would be anything less than 10 parts per million, and a secondary copper deficiency, which is caused from antagonists present in the diet, which limit the ability of the animal to absorb the copper provided to it. This means that the cattle may be consuming 10 or more parts per million of copper. However, they're not able to absorb and therefore utilize the copper, and it is essentially excreted and unused. In the case of copper, these antagonists are sulfur, iron, and molybdenum. And unfortunately for livestock producers in Hawaii, all three of these minerals are an issue in this state. As a ruminant nutritionist by my training, I always like to poke a little bit of fun at monogastric nutritionists because animals like poultry and hogs are pretty cut and dry when it comes to designing rations and overall nutrition. However, when it comes to ruminants, such as cattle, what goes in isn't necessarily what is absorbed and made available to the animal. There's a whole lot of modification and interactions that occur in the rumen, both good and bad. This is kind of the part of the presentation where I nerd out a little bit, so bear with me, but this kind of stuff really excites me and is often overlooked whenever we look at mineral nutrition. As I mentioned before, copper and iron have a pretty interesting relationship. And this relationship differs if we are referring to their interactions in the blood versus interactions that are going to occur in the rumen. Copper-containing enzymes facilitate the transfer of iron to the blood, and they also facilitate iron metabolism in the blood. Extreme copper deficiency can actually result in anemia due to the lack of iron that's being transported in the blood. However, switching gears in the rumen, high levels of iron can have negative impacts on copper absorption. So in this case, in the rumen, it's not the copper deficiency that's impacting iron absorption, it's high levels of iron that are going to cause copper deficiency. Iron levels over 200 parts per million can impede copper absorption in the GI tract. The specific mechanisms for how this happens are still being explored, but some of the ways that it impacts copper availability is by 1. Directly binding to the copper, 2. Dissociating from sulfur if it is in the form of ferrous sulfide and the sulfur binds to the copper, or 3. It can actually compete for absorption sites and essentially kicks copper out of the site of absorption in both the rumen and small intestine. Sulfur and molybdenum like to gang up to ruin copper's day. Molybdenum alone actually doesn't impact copper availability to a great extent, but molybdenum and sulfur together form thiomolybdates, which are a copper-hungry substance. These compounds then seek out copper and bind to it. Once this happens, the copper cannot be absorbed and is excreted in the manure. Sulfur on its own can also bind directly to copper and form an insoluble form of copper sulfide and is again unabsorbed and excreted in the manure. When we talk about copper nutrition, we really need to pay attention to these three minerals that I just covered, iron, molybdenum, and sulfur, and it's important to keep those minerals in mind whenever we're trying to balance a diet out for copper. This graphic illustrates everything I just talked about in a way more visual way. I actually created this for a publication that we're going to be putting out through the Extension Service this next year. But this is what I just talked about in the slide before. But what happens is the animal consumes feed or supplements containing various minerals, such as sulfur, iron, molybdenum, and copper. Those minerals are often bound to an inorganic compound, such as sulfate in the case of copper sulfate or ferrous sulfide, and they quickly dissociate or they break apart in the rumen. In the case of copper, this allows it to carry a charge, and essentially it attracts things such as sulfur, iron, or thiomolybdates, which if you remember from the previous slide, they are sulfur and molybdenum compounds. Once they are bound, they are nearly impossible to break apart, and the copper passes out of the rumen through the intestine where it cannot be absorbed and is essentially excreted out of the body into the manure, as you can see from my lovely little manure graphic there. You have likely seen this chart or something similar in this webinar series, but to just reiterate everything that you've been told, as we can see here in this chart, iron, molybdenum, and sulfur all have an ideal concentration in the diet, and therefore they're always needed. However, if it reaches levels greater than those listed here in this chart, it can impact copper absorption. As I just discussed, iron, that is anything greater than 200 parts per million.
For molybdenum, it's anything greater than 1 parts per million, and for sulfur, anything greater than 0.2% of the diet from a dry matter basis. Again, the MTC stands for maximum tolerable concentration, and so this is essentially the toxicity levels of these three compounds. We don't typically see in Hawaii's forages the maximum tolerable concentration for molybdenum and sulfur. However, you'll see on the next slide that we do kind of dance along that 1,000 parts per million of iron. We get kind of close to the 800 parts per million. So again, it's really important to keep this chart and try to compare it to any forage analyses that you have so that you can see if you're getting close to any of these dangerous levels or antagonistic levels of iron, molybdenum, or sulfur.
Again, this is a slide you have likely seen before. I believe Mark probably touched on this in more detail, but Hawaii's forages contain extremely high levels of iron, well above the antagonistic level, and depending on the season, both molybdenum and sulfur flirt with or are at the antagonistic level. We can see that during a majority of the year, iron levels are well above the 200 part per million cutoff for antagonism. All three of these are a perfect storm or a recipe for disaster when it comes to supplementing copper to your herd, and therefore we always recommend observing not just copper concentration in the forages, but also the concentration of all minerals in the forages. And then again, we always want to see you supplementing your cows. So what does this mean for you as a producer? How can you make sure your herd is copper sufficient and therefore as productive as possible and putting more money in your pocket and more food on the table for your family? The single most important thing you can do is know the nutrient profile of your feedstuffs. For most of you, that is going to be the forage in your pastures, the grasses, the legumes. At a minimum, forages should be sampled annually and a full panel should be done, which will include things like protein, NDF, ADF, the fiber aspects, as well as all macro and micro minerals. So that means the calcium, the phosphorus, as well as the cobalt, the copper, the iodine, sulfur, selenium, etc. Keep in mind that simply knowing how much copper is in the forages is not sufficient because we have antagonistics present in our forages. Now, ideally, I would like to see forage samples collected and tested seasonally. We have seen from the data that I presented in the previous slide on Hawaii's forages that mineral content is heavily influenced by season and namely rainfall. So we would like to see, ideally, if you can financially afford it, to be testing these forages seasonally. If you ever need to be trained on forage testing or have any questions about where to send it, what to have analyzed, how to collect it, or anything else, do not hesitate to contact either your county agent like myself or an extension specialist, and any of us would be more than willing to assist you with that. Now, after you've had your forages tested, next is developing a supplementation strategy. One size does not fit all, as I'm sure you've heard repeatedly and are going to hear repeatedly in this webinar, so it's important to try and tailor your supplementation for your pastures or your environment or even your cow herd. Keep in mind that salt alone is not sufficient in order to have a nutritionally balanced diet for your herd. Now, the next step is determining the best supplement for your cattle, which falls kind of into that developing a supplementation strategy. And I wanted to take a moment to have a brief discussion on inorganic versus organic minerals, because I'm sure you all have been hearing all this discussion about these products. Now, by organic, I don't mean USDA certified organic. I am talking about minerals that are combined with an organic compound, such as an amino acid. Organic minerals include chelates, protonates, polysaccharide complexes, and amino acid complexes. Inorganic minerals are the commonly known minerals such as sulfates, chlorides, and oxides. So what's the big deal about organic minerals? Well, they have a completely different chemical makeup than inorganic minerals. Organic minerals are more tightly bound together, meaning that when they enter into the rumen, they dissociate to a lesser degree in the rumen versus copper sulfate, which is almost 100% dissociated, which means the copper ions separate from the sulfate, or in the case of an organic mineral, that copper ion is more tightly bound to that organic compound, such as the fat or the protein or the amino acid. This oftentimes means that the organic copper can pass through the rumen without binding to any of the antagonistics, and a greater amount is available to be absorbed in the small intestine. These products are often more expensive than inorganic minerals and may not work for every operation or may not even be needed if there are little to no antagonists in your feed or in your forages. I highly recommend penciling out the use of these minerals and weighing out the inputs and outputs of their use. For example, whether you see increases in reproductive success versus the increased cost of this product, and maybe even using the risk tool that John will discuss in his talk. Again, if you ever have any questions about mineral types or supplementation strategies, I would be more than happy to discuss this with you. Clearly, I love to talk about minerals and nutrition. With that, I'm concluding my discussion today, and I want to thank you all for listening. If you have any questions, concerns, or just want to talk about what I discussed, please feel free to send me an email, which is on this slide, or you can give me a call and we can discuss things further. Enjoy the remainder of the talks in this webinar series, and I hope that you are able to join us at our next Field Day program, which will be this fall. Thank you all.